Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Penny.
And I'm Greg.
And this is She-Hulk Cast, a podcast dedicated to the Disney Plus show She-Hulk, Attorney at Law.
This episode, we're covering Season 1, Episode 9, Whose Show Is This? The Finale!
Welcome back, Greg. We missed you for the last couple of weeks.
Oh, I have missed being here, and listening to Kirk and Rinaldi go to town on the last couple episodes has been awesome, but I am thrilled to be back for this one.
Well, I missed you. As much as those guys were great, I missed you a lot. I'm glad to have you back.
Yeah, would you know, like you said, life events. I retired and then took a family trip to Philly and maybe heard gunshots in the night. But, you know, things happen. So be it. We all came back in one piece, and it's been a good couple weeks.
Well, congratulations on your retirement. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Well, you know what? I don't want to wait any longer to get into this because. I'm excited to talk about this one. How did you like this one?
I loved it. It was what I have wanted all season. It was a really dense episode. There's just so much to talk about. So much happened. So much of it was a lot of fun. Well, how about you?
I'm the same. I've one of the things that I have kind of worried about is that I'm kind of like fanboyed on the show, like, oh, I don't ever think, okay, I complained about the CGI, but like plot holes, I'm like, yeah, whatever, it's an entertaining story, but like this one, and I'll talk about some of it, but I really had, like, I was honestly laughing out loud at certain times, and I thought it was great, it was updated, it took all of the things that you guys, like you and Kirk, had talked about, and what classic She-Hulk stuff was and basically updated it for, you know, Disney Plus and Roku and whatever. And it was, I thought it was great. I loved it.
Yeah. I really want to know, I wonder if they changed the menu screen that she busts out of in like other countries, because I know that in some other countries, it's not Disney Plus, that some of the Marvel shows show up on other
it's
services.
Like Skynet or something like that.
Skynet.
I know what you mean. It's like Sky, I think,
Sky.
In Great Britain.
Yeah. I just wonder if the menu would look a little different for them or not. That was some fantastic She-Hulking.
It was phenomenal. It was so much fun to watch, and I can only imagine that some people had the same what happened? Did this literally just kick me out of my Disney Plus or out of my show and Disney? Oh wait, no, okay, she's still talking. All right, cool.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
So we'll talk about the big epic, fourth wall break in our point section, but there were a few other fourth wall breaks ahead of that. Starting with when she's lying on her childhood bed, in that sad room with like her mom's workout equipment and everything in there. And she's like, I know it's what I said I wanted, but this doesn't feel right. This isn't even a reluctant superhero story. I'm just getting screwed over. Is this what you guys want? And then one of my favorite moments from the show, when the voiceover narrator starts, he's like, Jen is having a hard time or whatever it is. And she's like, no, we're not doing a narrator. We're not that off the rails. I just thought it was so funny.
It was, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then when you know, then like when he's talking about, when she was talking about, she's like, in that, I think like you might even count this all in the same thing, right? She's sitting in that sad room, and she's like, "Once he said, come anytime. I mean, this is a time." That was one of my notes. Like, this is a time.
Yep.
It was great.
And then she's like, "I'm not running from my problems. It's a mental health break."
Yeah, I mean, this is just, that's just the way that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, then we get the massive fourth wall break, which is literally her breaking into Marvel Assembled, and we'll talk more about that. Mm. And then the last one, and I had a question about this. So you know, Blonsky says, "You got sucked into another show, didn't you?" And he's like, "Oh, we're really in an era of peak TV," and I was like, "So is he watching current shows now? Like, he was watching This Is Us and he was watching The Sopranos, or is he going to show up in a different show?" I thought that was really, I was like, am I going to see more Wong? Maybe. Probably. Madison and Wong.
Oh, Madison and Wong. I at first I thought that was a fourth wall break, and then I decided that scene between the two of them was just like a winky wink to the audience. And the reality that there's just way too much TV to watch right now. And we're all sort of like having to make priorities and, you know, can't watch everything.
We really are. Like, I don't know that I want to watch The Midnight Club just because of all, what I hear is like all the jump scare stuff. And that's not really my bag. But I mean, Mike Flanagan's fantastic. And I really dig a lot of his stuff, even when it's super creepy and whatnot.
Yeah. Like, there's so many shows I'm not watching. Like Interview with a Vampire, I loved the books. Yeah. But I started to watch it and I was like, I don't have headspace for this right now. Like I just can't take on another show. I'm gonna have to go back to it later.
I think right now I'm like trying to catch up on Cobra Kai, but yeah, no, we absolutely are in a peak, it's a post COVID peak TV cycle, and it just feels like they're just churning out more content, and so much of it is great.
Yeah. So much good content. It's fun.
Anyway. All right. So getting into what we're talking about. All right. So you got some lawyer stuff for us?
There was hardly any lawyer stuff. So I'm going to just jump ahead and
sounds good.
Talk about the metaphor of the show. It's a show about literal female empowerment, right? This woman is suddenly much more powerful than she was before. And it's a metaphor for the way that society reacts to women with expanding power. And the way that society has reacted to that for decades, if not centuries, is with a lot of fear, denigration, ridicule. They sexualized her. They monetized her, right? Holloway doesn't care what she wants. He just wants to like get PR and make money off of her. She's exploited and she's distorted. Her life story is completely taken away from her own control. And this distorted version is plastered all over the news and the internet. And the trolls come out of the woodwork immediately. She hasn't even done that much as She-Hulk, that when they start attacking her, like the mugging that gets set up is after all she's done as She-Hulk is stop Titania and take a job. That's it. That's all she's done. And they're all like, you better not strut around showing off your She-Hulk powers. Like the anger was there just because she had power and existed. And she gets the control of her own narrative back from this patriarchal system, right? Kevin represents the patriarchy. And the way she gets control is, one, she refuses to accept what society is handing her. She's like, no, this is garbage. It's not good enough. We're going to fix it. Two, she thinks creatively and she works outside the system when the system failed her. And three, she advocates for herself with her wits and not her super strength, because she knows from her very recent experience that women's anger is always, maybe not always, but is often overreacted to, whereas men's anger is treated as like some kind of masculine personality trait.
Well, it's just, men's anger is just, and women's anger is just hormones.
Yeah, it's emotions. They're out of control. She's hysterical. All that stuff that people have been saying about women for hundreds of years, right? Penny, just in order to
really
control them.
You just calm down. I mean, yeah, you're really blowing this out of proportion.
Bitches be crazy. Sorry. Okay. sorry, that's not a family friendly word, but the phrase doesn't work if you don't use the B word, so I had to do it.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, Jen's most powerful ability is the fourth wall breaking, because it's just a metaphor for her ability to see through artifice and flash and style to what is really going on behind the scenes. And in this case, it's Kevin, but as I said, he's the patriarchy and she's fighting against the patriarchy. And in the end, she takes control of her life back, which is very satisfying for this feminist.
Very nice. I mean, it was super satisfying to me. Although I do think that not it only works, but I think that one of the reasons that it works so well is that Tatiana Maslany is just fantastic. And she makes Jen Walters come to life. She is talking to, like, you feel like you know her. You feel like she's talking to you. Not, and maybe it's the writing. Maybe it's her face. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way she presents herself. Whatever it is, she makes you believe. Well, she made me believe that, you know, like in the moment, obviously I know she wasn't talking to Greg, but excuse me, she made me believe, like in the moment, that like, hey, like, really? Is this really what you want? Is this working for you?
It made me feel so involved in her story. Right. I was like, this is a real person and she's got real issues and she trusts me for some reason to tell me what she's really feeling in the moment. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I thought that the writing on this was so well done and so impressive. And I feel like that was Jessica Gao back there on the left in the writer's room.
I wasn't sure if it was her or not.
Not the one who was talking. But I feel like it was her in the back left, the back left corner of the table.
Yeah, I looked at some pictures of her online and the picture, you know, and the woman on the screen. And I was like, it could be the same person. There weren't a lot of Jessica Gao pictures out there. So I was like,
right,
is this the same woman or not? I wasn't positive. But she certainly was. I think that the woman who was talking was meant to be a Jessica Gao stand-in. Like, I called her fake Jessica. Because I'm pretty sure that was meant to be like Jessica's voice, or like a silly, you know, extreme version of Jessica's voice.
Right. No, I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I agree. I like that point, and I thought that it was so well done. Anything else for your first point?
Just smash the patriarchy. Okay.
and sometimes other people. So my first point, I'm gonna kind of tie into that, is Kevin. I thought that I watch everything with subtitles, not just like on my second watch or whatever. I know that some people who podcast, they will watch it just to soak everything in. I watch things with subtitles specifically because I've had young children a lot of the time of my life, and I don't want them to wake up. And my hearing is not necessarily what it once was, so I watch subtitles all the time. So when they're in the writer's room and they start referring to Kevin, I see in the subtitles that it is K.E.V.I.N. So I was like, oh, okay, so it's, you know, it's like, what was it from War Games? It was or Daryl or whatever the computer systems are that have what was it, the man from
Uncle.
Yeah, the man from Uncle. Yeah, those. So when you read it, you're like, oh, this is an organization, or it's a some sort of program or something like that. But so it took me out of it a little bit, because I obviously didn't think that they were talking about Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
But then when you finally see Kevin, and he's got the Kevin Feige hat on, like, or, you know, it's not a hat per se, but it's positioned so that it looks like the hat he's always wearing, and the rotating lights and lenses and whatnot. It looked like they took his mannerisms and just pasted it onto the arms or whatever, and I thought it was great. And basically what they said and what Jen said was everything that they've had complaints about, like the internet has had complaints about for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
For Phase 4, for Phase 3, for Thor movies, for all of the complaints were like, I absolutely love that they just took them and aired out basically every complaint they could think of and said, okay, you know, these are your issues. Oh, every Marvel movie ends with you throw a bunch of plot in there and a bunch of flash and then, oh, hey, and there's going to tease. And then he was like, oh, no, we're going to reveal, but we had to introduce. No. Save it for the movie. And then the sarcasm and the interaction between Kevin and Jen was so good. And then we got the answer as to why we never see her completely shift back, because it's too expensive. I mean, even if it's not too expensive, but
yeah,
it was. I was laughing out loud watching it both times that I watched it, and it was everything that I didn't know that I wanted.
Yeah, and when he's like, the visual effects team has moved on to a new project.
Yeah. I mean, like, the CGI in this episode was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was so good.
She looked fantastic.
Yeah, I'll get more into, you know, I'll save it for later. But I mean, like, it looked so good. And you know, I think I've very specifically, like, talked about how they cut away right before she shrinks completely back. Like, you see the start, and then when it gets back to Jen, it's, you never see the full thing. Oh, and then, like, all of the meta idea that, like, she's like, what's the most budgetary, like, disciplined way to do this? Like, should I just stay this way? Should I wait for a break, or what's going on? And they just cut.
Yeah.
It was so good.
I loved it.
So the whole interaction between Kevin and Jen was phenomenal. And if people are not watching this show because whatever reason, like, they are missing out on so much, because it's so good and so well written.
It's a little bit of a love story to all of Marvel, in the way that it's bringing in these threads from all these different characters and universes and aspects of the Marvel universe. It's like, they're as much a fan as we are, and they know what we like. And it's so meta, the way that it's constantly referencing itself, and the fan service that they know is fan service. And they're like, here's some fan service. Like, they don't pretend it's not fan service.
When are we getting X-Men?
Yeah. And then the little, like, to us. Yeah, the little tongue out, like, nah, I know you guys want to know. Like, so cute.
So fun.
She's adorable. I'm sort of in love with her. Tatiana Maslany. She's really.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you.
She's got, like, a spark that's really wonderful. You've got to watch Orphan Black. Oh, my God. She's so good in that.
I'm going to, but it's going to be hard to not expect her to, like, look at camera and start talking to me.
You'll get over that real fast when there's, like, nine of her on screen. And you'll be like, oh, my God, how is she doing this? It's like a technical feat. It's unbelievable.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I have for my first point.
All right. I want to talk about the opening. The homage to the 1970s Incredible Hulk TV show. That show was on CBS from 1977 to 1982, and there were three follow-up TV movies later in the 80s. It starred Bill Bixby as David Banner, not Bruce Banner. I don't really know why, but I think it was probably
it was actually David Bruce Banner.
Oh, really?
I'll be honest. I went back and watched the intro to the original Incredible Hulk, and on his tombstone, it's David Bruce Banner.
Oh, okay, cool. And Lou Ferrigno as the actual Hulk. You know, back then they just painted Lou Ferrigno green, and then David Banner would turn into Lou Ferrigno. Bill Bixby would turn into Lou Ferrigno, and then, you know, he would have like ripped clothes as the Hulk, and then when he turned back into David Banner, his clothes would be like whole again. It was a really important show to my family. We watched it together in the 70s. It was one of the few like nighttime TV shows that as kids we were allowed to watch. The homage had a lot of direct, like one-to-one pulls
direct.
from the credits of the old Hulk show. When she's sitting in that chair and the light goes over her face. And for me, the one I remember the best from my childhood is the rainy tire changing scene where she gets angry and then she turns into She-Hulk. I remember that from the 70s. The look and feel of it, her fashion and her hair, the glasses, the big hoop earrings. Oh, it was so great. And then the moment when she and Bruce are standing there together and she's like, "Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry." And he's just like, I don't know how he's doing it, but Mark Ruffalo is like looking 70s in the way he's standing.
He's channeling Bill Bixby, and it is. Absolutely, like the word that comes to mind repeatedly is just phenomenal, and it is so good. And he's even wearing the same clothes, and they're standing in the same positions. She's got the same color scheme as the reporter did in the show. He's wearing literally the same clothes as Bill Bixby is. That, like, my response to the Savage She-Hulk dream sequence was, oh, they nailed it. Like, they just nailed it. Between the cinematography and, like, I wonder, was it Lou Ferrigno in the green makeup? And who was the Savage She-Hulk? Who played her? Because I want to know. Was it Lou Ferrigno? Was it a dude? Was it not a dude? Like, it was... I'm sorry, I'm hijacking your point, but I was...
It's okay.
So, so excited by that. It was so...
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, they made the She-Hulk version in the dream sequence. She looked so much rougher and inelegant, and it definitely looked like a person in green makeup and a green wig and not any kind of CGI.
I can't imagine that it was CGI. Like, if it looked like Tatiana Maslany, like, maybe I could see that it'd be CGI, but I feel like it was just a different person. Maybe it was her stand-in dressed up in green makeup. And, you know, a bunch of muscle suits or whatever.
Yeah. Or maybe they hired some, like, bodybuilder. I checked IMDb and that kind of information wasn't up yet. I bet in a day or so it will be. But, you know, it's still the first day that it dropped.
Right.
All right.
Sorry, keep going with your.
That's my whole point. Yeah.
My next point was the Savage She-Hulk. Like, I know that I'm only focusing on like a minute and a half of the show, but it was so impressive and so much fun. I'll go ahead. I'll pivot. Right. Pivot.
Mm-hmm. Pivot.
I'll pivot, and I will move to how good Nikki and Pug were.
Specifically,
Pug, as uncomfortable as Pug was through most of this episode, Josh Segarra was so good in this very uncomfortable situation, and like when he's fanboying out about how he's calling the frickin' Hulk, and I mean, like him and Nikki, this, and I mean, and Ginger Gonzaga was so great in all of her, look, forgive me, Jen, for this transgression. And, yeah, I'll just have a turkey sandwich and some guac and some chips. And I like all of her under the breath, all of her under the breath comments or just like continued comments. I wouldn't have caught them had I not been watching the subtitles. And it was so worth it because Nikki doesn't stop talking. She is so much fun to listen to and to watch. And I'm going to keep working here because they still pay me well. And it was just like Nikki was fantastic. Like the side characters of Pug and Nikki were great in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that, they were so good. And the actor and actress, or actors, the actors were great. And I was so impressed with it. And it, yeah. So yeah,
I agree.
Just so much fun to watch.
I really loved watching Pug trying to fit in with those horrible people. It reminded me a lot of a scene from The Good Place when some of the characters are trying to fit in, like they're pretending to be demons in hell and they're like trying to fit in with the hell demons.
And
Chidi has to like give someone advice on how to torture someone else, and he just is so uncomfortable.
that's a really good comparison.
Yeah. And then I thought it was really funny when that one dude bro says, like Todd, when he introduces them to Pug, and then he's like, and he's hot too. And then this is another one. If I didn't have subtitles, I would have missed it. And somebody said, I'd smash you. And Pug makes this face like, where am I? Like, what is happening? And the other dude bros at that event were pretty funny. They're like, Lady Thor sucks. And I would even say that if she was a man. Like, they just, well,
I wasn't predictable. I wasn't sure if he was talking about Hulk, She-Hulk or Lady Thor. So I wasn't 100% sure if, like, She Sucks was about She-Hulk or Lady Thor.
I think that particular one was about Lady Thor, but there were plenty of people like griping about She-Hulk. There was like, you know, why should she have powers? And then of course the conversation about how she supposedly slept with Holloway.
Yeah.
That made me really angry. And you know, all those guys believe that no matter how many times they're told that it's not true, they will believe that forever.
So she slept with Holloway? That's their boss. And Pug's like, yeah. No, like you're mad about it. And it pisses me off. Yeah. It was just so over the top and so fucking funny. Sorry.
Yeah.
It was so funny. It was really, really good.
And the look on Pug's face when Todd says, of course you're one of us. And Pug is like, ew, no. Like, I don't want you to think that of me.
The one arm bro hug.
Yeah.
It was. That entire situation was like just a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And it was fun to watch.
It was so predictable. It was things that we've heard on the news and, you know, seen people post and, you know, these right-wing, alt-right websites that, you know, demonize women and people of color. This is their shtick. And they have, like, they all think they're original thinkers, but they only have, like, three ideas and they just remix them constantly.
Right.
They're not creative.
Kind of like the plot. Like, yeah, that we just recycle. What original story did you come? How did you come up with this very original story? Every other superhero, and the one guy's like nodding. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And she's like, and it suspiciously sounds like Super Soldier Serum. And I'm like, yeah, like
every time.
Yeah, Pug. Oh, I adore him.
All right, what do you have?
So I want to talk about the epic smash, right? The big smash. Yep. where she busts out of the show itself, and she goes through the streaming service menu, right? She punches out the She-Hulk icon or thumbnail, and then she's like, where do I need to go? And she looks around, and she's like, no. And then she sees Marvel Assembled, and she like climbs down, and the thumbnails all move when she climbs on them. It's so beautifully done. And then she lands, you know, in a studio lot, and you can hear somebody talking about the Infinity Gauntlet, and then she walks through, and you can tell I'm pretty sure that's the real Disney Studios in LA. There were the Seven Dwarfs were like holding up the roof in the background, and there was a statue of Walt Disney holding hands with Mickey Mouse, although it was the back of Mickey Mouse because, you know, that's expensive. And then she confronts the writers, and the writers' room had a lot going on in it. So there were on the wall, there were these like story breakdowns of episode 107, 106, 107, and 108, and then the finale. And under, I couldn't see 106. Under 107, there was a card that said, Jen and John totally do it. And I'm like, who's John? But that was Matt Murdock. And then one that said, John does Walk of Shame from Jen's apartment. Under episode 108, there was a card that said, Jen finally leaves Bruce's place. And I remembered how episode 1 was originally episode 8. So right. She would have been leaving Bruce's place. And then in the finale breakdown, the very last card said Jen dies. And I'm like, well, I'm glad she, you know, she killed that. There's a QR code on the door when she goes into where the writer's room is. I'm pretty sure if you scan that QR code, it gets you a free comic book download. There's a poster in the background that had Captain America, and it said, I want you to put your cell phone away.
Yeah, I actually paused to take a look at that.
And the Hulk one said, shred and smash sensitive documents. and then there was like a Viz Dev board that had like lots of drawings of her and like copies of comic book cover art and stuff like that. I thought it was a pretty cool writer's room, although really tiny, which made her look extra huge. That was pretty entertaining. What I didn't understand in the writer's room was why that dude was doing most of the talking when there was like fake Jessica Gao sitting right there. He seemed to be like in charge, and we know that Jessica is in charge. So I don't know what that was about, but there were a lot of women in the room, which I really appreciated. And a lot of them were not white, which I also appreciated.
I feel like this show has a lot of not just female, but minority writers as well.
Yeah. It's great. The hallway fight scene was so fun. And the soundtrack was a song called Big Energy by Lato. I looked up the lyrics. I was like, oh, I wonder if they're as interesting as the lyrics from something a couple weeks ago when Kirk read the lyrics. And they are not safe for work. So I am not going to read them
I noticed on the podcast. That there were a couple of dips in there where I was like, oh, that would have rhymed with something else.
Yeah. And I loved that there were fourth wall breaks within the fourth wall break. When she's talking to Kevin, she has two different times when she talks to the audience. And I was like, that's deep. That's like Inception. It's like a layer. Like
fourth wall break.
Within a layer. Yeah, I loved it. And the Kevin stands for Knowledge Enhanced Visual Interconnectivity Nexus.
We got the word nexus. So yep.
There we go. I loved it. This is what I've been waiting for. Remember, like in like episode 2 or 3, I was like, when is she going to like smash out of one scene and into a different one? And
this, yeah, you're right. Like this was the updated version of breaking through pains in the comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was so well done and so well choreographed. It was a smashing success, in my opinion.
Yeah, and if you guys don't remember, the comic book in the late 80s written by John Byrne, the Sensational She-Hulk series, is when this breaking the fourth wall concept was introduced, and it's sort of famous. Those comics are sort of famous for it. It was not part of Jen's oeuvre in earlier or later comics. That's a specific John Byrne era thing. And it's hilarious in the comics. And I highly recommend you read those particular ones that run. That's the Sensational She-Hulk. The earlier version, the earlier run was called Savage She-Hulk. And then mm-hmm. some of the later runs are just called She-Hulk. But yeah, the John Byrne series with the breaking the fourth wall is just legendary.
That's awesome. So I, because one of my notes was also the Savage She-Hulk intro,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to move straight into notes if you're cool with that.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Because
I thought there were a ton of great notes
yeah.
in this. I am going to address one of the things that, so you mentioned at the end of episode 9, on the writer's room board, it says Jen dies. I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe this may have been a reference to, they were talking about, so there was an interview with Jason Sudeikis and, I can't remember, and I think maybe Brett Goldstein and the guy who plays Coach Beard about Ted Lasso. And they were sitting in what looked like a writer's room. And there were a bunch of like, you know, season 3 plot cards, very similar to what we saw in this. And in like one of them at the end, it's like Ted dies. And I was just like, I mean, that is really, really funny. It sounds, I mean, it seems like it's a direct reference to that, which was also hysterical for everybody who was like trying to see what plot lines were for the third season or what plot lines are for the third season of Ted Lasso. Because it was obviously all just a setup and all that. I mean, I think. But it was like that when you said, I didn't notice that it said that, but once yeah. you said it, I was like, that's exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like an homage to those guys playing that exact same type of prank.
And it wouldn't surprise me to learn that there's a bigger inside Hollywood joke where about that, and that this was like one in a series of many jokes about.
Right.
You know, there was a bunch of nonsense on the whiteboard in that scene. And I was like, are these inside jokes? It said nanobots. Are you sure that's a real apple? Hope you're not allergic to wowies. There's something attractive about a man's knees and gamma goo. And I was like, that's just nonsense. That doesn't mean anything. And then I was like, it probably means a lot to the people behind the show.
Right. Exactly. Like, oh man, like I heard about that from, you know, this other writer's room or whatever. Yeah, that's absolutely. All right. So I'm going to just some of the notes. Well, I'm going to go through all my notes. Okay. We got her nickname in the media now, the difficult diva of law. I mean, seriously, we can't even, like, it has to be something about being a diva or whatever. Like, what are you wearing to the courtroom today? That's enough. Okay. And just turns around and walks off like, are we seriously continuing to do this? Like,
yeah.
I know that it happens. I do, but it just drives me bonkers because I don't watch the shows or the red carpet things or whatever, saying like where people get asked what they're wearing, because I think it's asinine and I think it's idiotic. And while yes, they may, like, these clothes may cost thousands upon thousands of dollars, who cares? Like, I guess some people do, but I don't. It doesn't affect me at all. I'm going to step off my soapbox and move on to a different note, but God, it just irritates the crap out of me. Jennifer Walters, known as the cousin of the Hulk. What? Known as the Hulk? No, she's known as She-Hulk. Like, what? Anyway, it was silly. All right, so we got Scar, an introduction of Hulk's son. So, you know, that's cool. And the family dinner, like, was all of the things. It was, like, it was obviously Matt Murdock, which was great. And their interaction was, like, I feel like they maybe had the same interactions that they had, that, like, Mark Ruffalo and and Tatiana Maslany had that made the chemistry so good. And then, you know, the Mark Lynn Baker was fabulous. Oh, son, all of the conversations are going to go this direction. Yeah. So buckle up. And then when he, like, and then, you know, Mark Lynn Baker, when he's like, I don't care if there's a drought going on, I got plenty of water pressure. He was so good. The family dinner was so uncomfortable, and it was really entertaining to see Jen have a partner in that. And I really, really want to hope, I really hope to see them together in the future, even if it's just off again, on again.
They're cute together, right? Like, when he was like, oh, really, I need a co-counsel, right? Over here. Yeah, it was adorable.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, okay, that's a little bit cheesy, but I mean, like, as lawyers, like, okay, sure, I guess I could see that.
Yeah, the whole family is so annoying except for Mark Lynn Baker. Like, the rest of them, ugh.
Like, don't get me wrong, like, I feel like that's the way that a lot of people would, a lot of families are. Like, it was so funny that, like, you know, the aunt is, like, hitting on Matt, and, like, you know, he can't see, and, like, the uncle is giving him the evil eye, but, I mean, I guess maybe he can see, but, like, another blind man wouldn't be able to tell that he was getting the evil eye from somebody. Like, he's not doing anything.
Although, you know what? I bet you could feel it. You can, like, feel when someone's giving you the evil eye.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I loved Emile's apology. Like, I'm sorry that you're upset about this. I've been in that situation. I've said those words before. I'm sorry. Was there an apology in there that I missed? I'm sorry that you are upset by the things that I feel and that I expressed. I'm not going to apologize for saying them, because so Emile didn't seem to know, like, who he was hosting and who he was speaking for. He gave a bunch of very generalized things, right? Seize your goal.
Yeah, I think you guys are he really was just doing it for profit.
That was an hysterical, just, like, throwaway line that was awesome. Oh, strictly for profit. It's just for nothing except for money. That's all I'm doing this for. You know, don't ask permission. Be powerful. You are the only boss. Yeah, it was good stuff. I did think that it was really funny that that Todd was like, I didn't get handed superpowers, as he's being handed superpowers.
I really like want to know. Handed
the needle.
I want to know where Todd's money comes from, because he talked a lot about, like, earning it and not being given it, right? He was grossed out by nepotism, but, like, we don't know why he's rich and why he's a big client.
Right. I feel like there's got to be a story there. He's got to be loosely based on someone or a conglomeration of someone's.
Yeah.
Because I never read She-Hulk, or he didn't even go back and read them. Like, I don't think that there was a Hulk King, character or whatever.
I haven't found one.
Which makes this even more, like, I loved, I guess this could be my third. Oh, this girl, I've got a bunch of points. Whatever. We're throwing it all out, right?
Yeah. It's the finale. Woohoo! Anything goes. We're just
talking about stuff now. So, yeah. So one of the things that I loved about this, and, you know, part of the argument was true, right? So the end of this was a little anticlimactic. It was a family barbecue.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, okay, sure, we met Hulk's son. I didn't really care at that point because I was so thrilled to see Jen semi-happy, even though she's being miserable at this, but she's being miserable with Matt. And I thought it was great. It was so enjoyable to me to watch this and to observe this interaction. that it didn't matter that, like, oh my god, oh, your family, there's another Hulk now, because it's another Hulk wherever. And I'm just like, it subverted my expectations. It did some of the things that I had, you know, I'd heard you guys talk about and hoped for, but it also, like, hey, we're gonna get Hulk King and he's gonna smash people, and Titania shows up, and, you know, Bruce just pops in from outer space to save her in her own show. And like, you know what? Let's, why are we doing this? This is silly.
Yeah.
And like, she's just like, okay, hey, we're just going to get rid of this and cut this, and we're not going to do it at night because that's depressing, and we do it in daylight. And I liked that. I really enjoyed it. Although I will say that, you know, it did feel anticlimactic, which, again, like I just said, subverted my expectations.
Yeah.
And that I was thinking it was going to be a huge thing, and I was looking forward to, oh, now it turns out that the blood didn't matter, and we just changed the rules and not play that card, and you know, oh, bloodline plot deleted, and I thought it was great. If I haven't gushed enough, I thought this episode was phenomenal and a great finale to the series. So back to my notes, Wrecker seems pretty chill.
Yeah.
Like still seems like a pretty chill guy, and you know, kind of helpful and all that. I did think that the, like, you know, one looked suspicious to me and having an earbud in.
Mm-hmm.
No, believe me, you won't be the only person. And I've seen all those people. So I agree. come on, Pug. Just be gross. That was a great line by Nikki. And then I'm just gonna, the last one I'm gonna talk about is Nikki's face when she realizes that she needs to be a bro,
yeah,
in order to get into the party. She's like, ah, Pug, are you still here? I need a favor. It was so realistic and so very much. Yeah, I get it. It was scripted, but I mean, it was very much so, like, oh my god, I gotta just figure this out, and I need you to be here so that I can get some help.
Yeah,
okay.
I also enjoyed Pug fanboying about Jen and Daredevil getting together. He seemed really excited yeah. about that, and mm-hmm. it was funny when Titania was like, "Hi, Daredevil," and he's like, "Yeah, whatever."
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she clearly knew who he was and wanted to be a part of it. I did think it was funny when she first showed up. I was like, is she here because she just, like, wants attention and something's going down? Or is it because even though she and Jen are rivals or nemeses or whatever, like, these troll incel dudes are the worst and she needs to help get rid of them? But
does she ever use a door?
Yeah.
that was a great line.
Yeah, she just smashes in the wall. So great. I loved when Daredevil just, like, fell out of the sky, and he has this look like, how do I get here? And yeah. He's like, I'm here to help. And she's like, oh, we're all set.
I'm here, Jen. I'm here to save you or help you or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're good. You missed it. I missed it all. All right, I guess. So I did notice that in the picture, or in one of the drawings at the end, and we've seen it literally every episode, but it's after Titania busts through the wall and you see Jen in Jen form, and she's got, like, you know, the busted sleeves and all that. And in this one in particular, it made me think of, she was breaking through the fourth wall. Not because I understand she wasn't the one who made the hole in that particular instance, but mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, look at that. She, like, smashed the fourth wall. That's,
yeah.
Even if it wasn't her, but I thought that was really good.
There was some great stuff in the drawings at the end. There was a drawing of Blonsky putting the inhibitor on Princess Silkfeather. There was a drawing of Kevin reading the very first issue of the Savage She-Hulk from 1980. And
was that the Savage She-Hulk?
Yeah, it was. I went and checked.
Okay.
And Todd being taken into custody in the courtroom, and in the background, there's a bunch of dudes in the gallery there behind Jen, all like sweating and looking uncomfortable and frightened. So I assume those are the other members of Intelligentsia.
Right.
I thought one of them might be Josh, but it was kind of hard to tell in the drawing.
Okay. Actually, I'm not done.
Okay, good. Keep going.
Nikki's lines, by any and all means. No, legally. I said, by any and all means. Oh, you're going to be all Jen Walters about it. So good.
I would watch a whole show about Nikki.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, what we need to get is we need to get the Nikki Darcy spinoff.
Oh yeah.
And then Dennis, take a lap, Dennis.
Oh God, Dennis, such an opportunist.
And my last one, for sure. Last one. When she scrolled down to find Emile's text thread, Emile was just below Nikki. How many people have texted her to get to Nikki, like more recently than Nikki? Like it was a ton.
Yeah,
I thought that was really weird, because I've scrolled through my phone trying to find a particular person who I've recently texted or whatever, but I was just like, man, there's a lot of people between your best friend and the top of your list. So, All right, that's seriously for real all of my notes.
All right, I have a few. First, the video of Jen dancing in law school is clearly a callback to the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez video that came out a few years ago that somebody found, and it was her dancing like on a rooftop in college with her friends to that song from The Breakfast Club, and she's doing the whole dance that Ali Sheedy does. And and I remember at the time, like the alt-right people spreading that around the internet being like, look how dumb she looks. And everyone being like, she looks fun and cute. Like, it was like, I don't understand why you think this video is the slam dunk you think it is, but it's not. Just ridiculous. I thought it was, it continues to be a problem in everything having to do with Daredevil, that his whole shtick is that he grew up in Hell's Kitchen and he helps people who can't afford legal services, because Hell's Kitchen is now like a super swanky, gentrified neighborhood in New York City.
Super gentrified area.
Yeah, it's pricey. It's got a lot of like luxury high-rise apartment buildings. There's tons of really trendy restaurants in that neighborhood. It's just like they need to come up with a way to deal with that narratively, because the whole like Hell's Kitchen, that sounds scary or whatever, it just doesn't work anymore for anyone that knows anything about New York.
I mean, the problem being is that in the 70s, when Daredevil made his, not debut, but like when that was like more popular, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
It was a slum. It was, I mean, yes, I agree. Like, I say I agree. I don't know anything about Hell's Kitchen, but except for that I've heard the name and in the area. But I mean, that does make sense that it'd be like, nowadays, Hell's Kitchen isn't nearly as crappy as it once was.
Oh, it's not crappy at all.
Right. Okay.
My brother lived there for several years in a like big, fancy, luxury high-rise apartment building with like a swanky roof deck and game room and an indoor gym and like all this other stuff. It's just funny to me that he keeps coming up, because I remember that from the Daredevil TV show, and I was like, they need to update that.
That needs to not be the thing.
Where are Blonsky's soulmates? We haven't seen them since the parole hearing. Like, they're not anywhere on the retreat. Like, where did they go?
That's a good question.
Were they fake? I want to know where they are.
Yeah.
The CGI looked great this episode.
Yes, it did. And, oh, I'm sorry. I'm tacking onto yours. This isn't one of my notes. This is just me tacking onto one of yours. I'll see you on the big screen.
Yeah.
Really? No.
There were several season 2 teases as well. Like, Yeah. She said she had ideas for a season two, and when she interrupted the writers, one of them was saying, "What if season two is just one long dream sequence?" And I was like, "No, I hate dream sequences. They really bother me." Jen had some funny stuff in her childhood bedroom. She had a poster for Legally Blonde and a poster for Erin Brockovich, and there was like some owl stuff, like hanging, I don't know, like stained glass thing of an owl. I think the owls, because she had an owl in her office as well. I think owls are some kind of Easter egg that I just don't get. Like, there's an owl character out there that this is talking about, maybe.
Hmm. The only owl character I know is like from Watchmen.
Yeah, Night Owl.
Who is like Batman. Yeah, Night Owl. Yeah, it was like the Batman version of whatever in, was it New York? I think it was New York.
Yeah, New York. That's another comic universe that when it got updated to modern times, sort of like was still kind of pretending it was in 1980s New York City. And it's like, New York is really different now.
Yeah, I that was a really good show. Not that we're talking about Watchmen, but that was an excellent like follow on to the comic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was like 30 years later or whatever.
It was fantastic. All right.
Any other notes?
No, I'm good.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back. There's more to come. Stay with us. And we're back. All right. So moving into this time, we actually have news about She-Hulk. Or at least some news that we wanted to share, or, you know what, I'll let Penny take it away. Go ahead.
Well, first off, I'm sorry, we don't have any news about a season two pickup yet. I really want it to get picked up for another season, but they're not saying anything yet. I found this Washington Post article with the dopey title of Tatiana Maslany on How She-Hulk Became One of Marvel's Funniest Shows by David Betancourt. It's a really long article, so we're going to link it in the show notes, but here's some highlights. Anger does not trigger She-Hulk's transformations like it does with the original Hulk. She makes the switch from gentle to green whenever she wants. That creates the weird situation of everyone from her supervisor at work to the men she dates preferring her as She-Hulk and not as her less superhuman alter ego, which allows the show to examine an issue that is a little more serious. The ownership that people have over a woman's body and how they treat her based on how she presents is very intense and very felt. We were touching on that in a way that was super relatable and light, but also could prompt people to think about things in a way, Maslany said. She is sort of trying to find wholeness in these two seemingly opposing sides of herself that are actually all her and all who she is. It's just different bodies. That duality is really interesting to me, and that contradiction and that resistance to those two sides of herself that she's also kind of secretly embracing. She-Hulk also focuses on sex as a part of the story in a way that other corners of the MCU do not, featuring dating apps and superhero hookups. In this season's penultimate episode, Charlie Cox made his Marvel Studios debut as Daredevil, resuming a role he originated on Netflix back when Marvel and the streamer still worked together before Disney Plus. Daredevil hooks up with She-Hulk after the two share a night of crime fighting together, forcing him into a bootless superhero walk of shame the next morning. Maslany credits Gao with placing just as much emphasis on the personal side of being a superhero as potential threats to the universe. It's a horny show, Maslany said. It's joyful, and there's something about it that does kind of buck at the classic Marvel things that we've seen in the past.
It's a horny show. That is a great quote. Continues, her co-star Ruffalo has the most cinematic Hulk and Bruce Banner appearances ahead of Edward Norton and Eric Bana, but can appear as his version of the Hulk in the MCU only in guest appearances because of an ongoing deal with Universal. Ruffalo has often said that he'll probably never have his own Hulk movie, unlike many of his Avengers co-stars. Maslany's She-Hulk has no such limitations. He was super jealous of it, Maslany said with a laugh. That's what's so great about the way we explore these two so differently. His Hulkness is a limit on him in one way, where mine is a different kind of limitation. Our consciousness is so different based on how we've been socialized, or how we have been socialized to deal with our emotions. he needs to go off to an island that his billionaire friend has funded him to figure out how to be less angry. And I'm sort of like, that's what I do every day. There's something really interesting in that commentary. But I want to see a Mark-led movie as Hulk. He'd be amazing. I agree. She-Hulk co-stars Josh Shigara and Renee Elise Goldsberry said that one of the more frequent sources of laughs on set was when they would constantly be reminded to avoid eye contact with Maslany as She-Hulk, since she would later be digitally altered to be almost 7 feet tall. They also kept asking Gao if their supporting characters, Augustus Pug and Mallory Book, lawyers at She-Hulk's firm, would get superpowers like Maslany. Sigar is no stranger to superhero television, having starred as a villain in CW's Arrow, and Hamilton star Goldsberry is a veteran of courtroom comedy and drama, having co-starred in Ally McBeal earlier in her career. So far, the answer has been a definitive no. We're all working out, just in case, Goldsberry said. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
If you had the not only the superhero law division, but the superhero law division.
Yeah. I would love to see really cool. Mallory Book with superpowers. I think her superpower would be like ultimate polish. Like she would just be like, everything is in its place.
Yeah, she's basically, God, what are they called? Succubus?
Oh, yeah.
A succubus, but with poise, or with poise and with fashion.
Yeah.
But purely by the way that she looks, she can make you do whatever she wants.
Yeah. And Pug would have some kind of like just mensch superpower. Like he would definitely be like somebody who helps people. He'd probably be a sidekick. I don't think he's a main.
Awesome sidekick.
I don't think he's a main superhero. Yeah.
No, he could totally like he could be basically be like the outfitter. I got plenty of kicks for you, buddy.
Yeah.
One to rock, one to stock. But yeah, so that I'm gonna go read all of the rest of that article because that was great.
Yeah, and we'll link it in the show notes so everybody can read it.
Absolutely.
We got a bunch of listener feedback on Facebook, and some of it was about last episode, so we'll do those first.
Okay. From Emily Rouse with regard to episode 8, I'll preface my comment by saying I never finished Netflix's Daredevil show. I watched about half before I found it too dull to continue. But this episode of She-Hulk was so good. Honestly, I've been underwhelmed by the series, but this injected new life into it. My favorite moment was when Matt calls her Jennifer, and she in turn calls him Matthew. I hope we see more of them together. Us too. Well, me too. Penny and Kirk called this ending on last week's podcast, and it's absolutely horrible what's been done to Jen. But at least it gives us some conflict and storytelling that's leading somewhere. It only took 7 episodes. Well, hey, Emily, like I understand where you're coming from. I really enjoyed the first 6 episodes, but I get it. Also, I'm not a lawyer, but I couldn't Jen have handled Luke more delicately instead of outright blaming him for Leapfrog's disaster, which had yet to be proven. She could have said Leapfrog was claiming a defect. Thoughts?
Emily, yeah. You couldn't be more right that that's how she should have handled it. I think, you know, TV law is very different from real law, and they compress things and make things more dramatic. Like, yeah, she would never have done
not
that.
Not only that. Yeah, no, I completely agree with Penny and Emily. It's also not just being a lawyer, but just called tact.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm going to investigate things before I just flat out blame somebody or serve somebody or whatever. I'm going to bring it up to you. No, that was absolutely invented drama. And but yes, you're absolutely correct, Emily.
Bionix Vargas says also about episode 8, I watched this episode of She-Hulk twice in one day for the walk of shame, and then adds a hands over face emoji and laughing emoji.
You are not the only one. the walk of shame was everything I didn't know I needed.
I like the drawing version of it.
That was the end credits. That was also excellent.
Yeah.
Yes. Seeing Nikki in the background, you're like, oh, hey, who's this guy? Adam Buckley. G'day, everyone. Best episode. Loved the updated version of jumping out of the page. Not so sure about the Hulk mic drop moment at the end. I'm assuming the good day meant from Australia. If not, my bad. Sorry. I'm still going to include my horrible accent. Absolutely loved the classic version of the opening. Had me cracking up. Also, best tag after the credit. Cracked me up again.
That's a pretty good Australian accent, Craig. I would not have attempted that.
that's fair. I've been watching a lot of Bluey, and apparently I just found out that it was Australia and not New Zealand, or not Kiwi, so that was my bad.
Bob Oak says, well, that was one hell of a fourth wall break. My immediate knee-jerk reaction to this episode was that I didn't like it. And I mean, I really didn't like it. But as I have thought about the episode more and more today, I've realized that not only did I like the episode more than I initially thought, I really loved what the writers did with the episode. The writers were extremely clever here. Jennifer Walters won the day by embracing her full self. She-Hulk smashed through the Disney Plus menu and took out the guards, but Lawyer Jen identified the issues, argued her point, and eventually created a better conclusion for herself without throwing a punch at Kevin. It truly marked a full circle for Jennifer's journey of self-discovery and self-acceptance. Not only that, Jennifer got to seize control of her own story and narrative. She is no longer a passenger in her life. She is clearly the driver now. As a fan, I truly loved that for this character. On top of this layered and nuanced storytelling, we got so many cool bits. The intro was amazing! I loved the old Incredible Hulk show, showing my age a little there, and this homage was awesome! Annoying Todd is the Hulk King? I applaud the writers for making the Big Bad a character hiding in plain sight all along instead of some hidden menace that we never saw until the last episode. So many things were good about this episode, it is too much to list them all. So why was my gut reaction to hate the episode? I think the fourth wall break was just too jarring for me. I think it interrupted the flow of the episode so much that I lost the plot and couldn't get back into it. I had to rewatch everything past the Disney Plus menu and ponder the episode before realizing how genius it was. So yes, I am a fan of this series, and I sincerely hope we see a lot more of She-Hulk. Me too, Bob.
Yeah, that's totally fair, Bob. I didn't have that. Yes, it was very jarring, just because it's just like the confusion, and then the, oh, this is cool. That may all just also just be the product of the my type of like the type of viewer that I am. I'm very surface. I also have dealt with a lot of things in my career where it's, hey, something's changing at the last minute and we have to adapt, which is why my wife complains that I don't plan nearly enough, because I personally feel like if I spend a bunch of time making plans, well, and then they're just going to get thrown off at the last minute, then, you know, who cares? Why bother? I get where you're coming from, but yeah, I mean, I didn't have that issue. But I'm glad that you kind of, you know, sat, pondered, maybe watched it again and ended up realizing how much you enjoyed it. Cause I'm with you. I really love the series and I'm really hoping that Tatiana Maslany, is able to show up again as She-Hulk. Jeff Allen. First of all, let me start by saying I've really enjoyed this whole season, but unfortunately this episode blew all the others out of the water. When suddenly every character converged with the Lodge, I got really annoyed. And then Coiroy took a page straight out of Burns' run of the comic. The Disney Plus menu gag was brilliant, and the rest of the episode had me rolling with laughter. Totally agree, Jeff.
Gijo Putia says, love the homage to the old school Hulk show. I was a fan as a kid, and it invoked a lot of sweet memories. When y'all mentioned that she would bust out of the page in the comics, I was wondering what the equivalent would be with our modern-day TV setup, and it did not disappoint. The show as a whole is great if taken for what it is, a light, fun show with exaggerated traits of toxicity of male-domineering culture. It breaks the mold of the regular superhero shows and a great break from the other grim stuff I watch.
Good points. From Kelly Burgess. I love the finale in the series. I do admit I got excited when Hulk showed up, but I loved how she stopped it and went after the writers even more. I was watching with subtitles, so it gave away the reveal of Kevin. Hey, me too. Unfortunately, but it was still a fun scene. And then Hulk showed up at the barbecue with his son. My line was blown!
We have one voicemail from our friend Steve Brown.
Hello, She-Hulk cast. This is Steve, and this is the finale of She-Hulk season one.
I just had to pause real quick. I am loving the opening that's the same as the opening of the original Hulk show, Incredible Hulk.
Wow, so she's in prison. I wonder how far, how of a jump we've made.
The head thunk on the table.
I called that a few episodes back. She originally didn't want the superpowers, but then she got used to them.
I cannot wait to cover this on panels.
I love that Pug is helping. Todd Phelps is the Hulk King. Where's Josh at? Shouldn't he be in this room too? Oh no, he's part of this intelligentsia group and they're on the, oh no. Oh, and enter Bruce.
I love it. Jen crawling out of the TV set into the menu. She breaks into the writer's room. They're talking about the second season.
Subtitles just had Kevin as an acronym, K-E-V-I-N.
This barbecue ending with the family is great, and them grilling Matt. I love it.
All right. Can't wait to watch it more times, and can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Steve. As always, I love a good live Steve.
Yeah, that's, I mean, basically he nailed most of the points that we talked about. And so,
he
sounded like he was having a good time.
A fraction of the time.
Yeah, that's basically all right. And that was a good show, Benny. Steve covered it.
Yep, we're all set. We'll just play that on the feed.
All right, so that moves us into our final Marvel question of the week. Now that we've gotten to see She-Hulk and Daredevil fight, who else would you like to see Jen fight, and who do you think would win?
Mark Nichols says, I would actually love to see her fight Ant-Man just to listen to the banter back and forth. I just think it would be funny. I have to agree. Plus, watching something so big versus something so small sounds like a lot of fun. Also, did I hear you make a West Wing reference a few weeks ago? That is my all-time favorite show and another great podcast. We very well might have made a West Wing reference.
I feel like you did.
I loved West Wing, so...
Oh yeah, West Wing was great.
I reference it often. Maybe Walk and Talk? Yeah. I might have said Walk and Talk.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like it very specifically came up.
Yeah.
Rita Catanella Orell. I'm so sorry. Rita Catanella Orell? It would be fun to see Yelena and Kate Bishop team up against her. That trick arrows would do quite a bit of a trick, although I just don't know how you're going to get through that skin.
Maybe it's more about like nets and lasers and capturing rather than piercing.
Yeah, that's true.
Bob Oakes said, and as for the Marvel question of the week, I'll get my popcorn ready for Carol Danvers versus Jennifer Walters.
Unfortunately, I think that Carol would take her out. I mean, the flying thing is pretty significant. And then like the whole like sonic powers and stuff. Although maybe that's me transferring that from comic book powers to what we've actually seen on screen. Kelly Burgess says, I'd like to see her fight Loki. So she would Hulk smash him. And Rinaldi, our host from last week, Loki would need to forfeit before the fight begins. Kelly responds, I could see him try to charm her before getting smashed. Tom Hiddleston and that initial Hulk smash in Avengers was all of the things, and it was great. It'd be a very interesting approach to see how she wanted to try to fix Loki.
Rinaldi went on to list his choice, which was She-Hulk versus Jessica Jones, and that Jessica Jones wins by outsmarting She-Hulk.
I just like, and I'm not, I haven't watched all three seasons. I think it's three seasons of Jessica Jones. But like Jen's pretty savvy herself. She's not as savvy like in superheroing, but I think she's pretty smart. So it'd be an interesting fight.
Yeah. They're friends in the comics.
Oh, are they? Yeah. That's good. Mark Kirkman says the leader. I think that She-Hulk would smash the leader quite a bit.
Yeah. And I would enjoy seeing that.
Oh yes.
Ezra Sherman, being a little bit cheeky, says, just to merge two different podcasts, I would like to see her fight a Balrog. He is, of course, referring to Rings of Power and the other podcast that I host with Anwen, Cast of the Rings. Which also is having a finale this week.
Oh yeah, I need to catch up on that. So what's your choice, Penny?
I actually spent some time thinking about what the fight would look like with a Balrog. I think the Balrog would win, but only because it's an immortal magical being. I would like to see her fight the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that the dialogue would be really entertaining.
I mean, that makes me think of the Infinity War, the Drax and the wise Gamora and Star-Lord and Peter Parker, or rather Spider-Man and Iron Man, like that whole Thanos battle on Titan, like that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And I want to see fourth wall breaks in the middle of battle.
Like, yeah.
That's what I think I want to see. And like, honestly, like I thought about it a little bit, but like I saw the stuff. You know what? Screw it. I want to see her beat the crap out of Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and especially in like the super suit, and he's just like throwing crap at her. I think she'd smash the crap out of him, but Batman's just so haughty all the time. And, you know, he's rich, and I mean, I guess she's kind of rich too, but now she's like out of an apartment and living in her parents. He's living in his parents too, but it's a little different. But yeah, so just because I want to see Batman brought low. Don't get me wrong, I love Batman as a character, and I think that he's been represented great in the DCE, all of the U. Yeah, that'd be cool. I think specifically Ben Affleck's Batman. Seeing Ben Affleck Batman getting smashed by She-Hulk would be, then of course then Superman would show up to save Batman's bacon. But sorry, I'm like waxing poetic over here. that's what I got. All right, that's our show and the season. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully we're back for season two.
Yeah, everybody out there, like, you know, send good thoughts to Marvel and let them know that we love She-Hulk. If you'd like to get in touch with us or find out more about Podcastica, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
You can write in or record a voice message right there on podcastica.com, or find links to our social media pages and other shows.
Well, I already mentioned Rings of Power, which is also coming to a conclusion this week. I'm pretty excited about it. So that podcast is called Cast of the Rings. And I'm personally really getting a lot out of the Handmaid's Tale podcast. It's not enjoying it. That's not really the right word.
It's not fun?
But Handmaid's Tale is such a intense show with so many layers that it really helps to process it with the gang on Handmaid's Tale cast.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm trying to catch up on Cobra Kai, so that I can actually listen to the podcast. But Midnight Club just started on Strange Indeed, and I may force myself to watch it just so I could listen to Rima. And I mean, then House of the Dragon and Dragoncast is, I think I'm about 10 hours worth of podcast behind. I'm working on it.
I listened to a bunch of that today, and it was a really long episode. I am only about halfway through.
I understand. All right, that's all we have. But remember, that's what Hulks do.
We smash things. Bruce smashes buildings. I smash fourth walls and bad endings.
And sometimes Matt Murdock.
Yeah. Scene.
And that's a wrap.
Wow.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.